is the Sports Fever. If it's a sport, we cover it. And here are the hosts, Anthony Colasano, Dom DeRosa, Noah Gugliotta, also known as Googs, and Sean Johnson.
.com. Probably nominated for National Association of Broadcasters 2019 Marconi Award for Best College Radio Station of the Year. And live from the Rider University Studios, it's the Sports Fever. I'm your host, Anthony Colasano. And alongside me today is Don DeRosa, Sean Johnson, No Gugliotta, or otherwise known as...
Googs.
Oh, yes. Let's go.
And we have a special guest today, friend of the show, and obviously all our good friends, Chris Witowski. Chris, how you doing today?
Hey, guys. It's good to be here.
Good to have
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. We know, you know, we always love having you. But let's get right into it. Topical news of the week, the trade deadline in the NBA. In the last couple of years, it's kind of been, I would say, not as exciting or fun to see happen on, you know, the trade deadline. But this past one that happened on Thursday, it was kind of a big one. A lot of moves were made. A lot of teams kind of flipped the switch. Specifically, we'll start with the Chicago Bulls. You know, this was a team coming into the season that everyone just kind of wrote off. And, you know, they haven't been playing well, but, you know, this trade deadline, they kind of flipped it around. They traded for Nikola Vucevic. They traded some young people, and, you know, they're starting to, you know, really, you know, really get it together. So, Christian, sure, the guest, I'll start with you. You know, how shocked were you that Chicago was kind of making bold moves during the trade deadline?
I mean, they kind of had to make moves to keep Zach LaVine happy. Like, you know, in order to keep Zach LaVine in Chicago, like, you have to put some kind of piece around him to help him win. He can't be the only guy going out there every night and scoring. Mm-hmm. And also, like, I have to say that I was pretty shocked to see the return that the Magic got for Vucevic. I thought it was pretty low. Like, you know, what, just Wendell Carter Jr. and I think a couple of picks it was. And if the Bulls are good, those first round picks may not, like, ever amount to anything. So, like, in the long run, I think Orlando traded a big star to another team with a budding superstar for essentially, like, little to no compensation, which was a little shocking.
Right, exactly. Because, I mean, I have him, you know, me, you, and Sean were all in, you know, the fantasy league, and, you know, Vucevic is my center, and, you know, this guy's averaging, you know, 25-12, and he'll dish out three assists, he can hit a couple threes. He's one of the premier centers in the league. He can do a little bit of everything. I think he's kind of like the 1B to Nikola Jokic. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think in the long run, Chicago won the trade, and they could really grow their team with these two guys. You know, they lock up Vucevic and then just start, you know, building around them. It could be really good. And obviously the other big trade that happened was with the Miami Heat and the Houston Rockets in training for Victor Oladipo. This was kind of a big one. This kind of showed that Nets trade was kind of a big loss for the Rockets, because that was kind of their big piece coming from that trade months ago, and now they just traded him to Miami for literally nothing. Everyone was trolling the Rockets fans on Twitter because they essentially just lost both trades entirely. You know, and Sean, you know, I'll start with you. You know, they essentially have like a new big three, you know, Jimmy Butler, Oladipo, and, you know, Bam Adebayo. So do you think they could start to right the ship to their season? Because in the beginning, they were struggling. Then in the middle, they were kind of floating around when Butler came back, and now they've been kind of getting it going. Now adding him to the team, Oladipo, it kind of elevates them more into that four-team pack now, with now them, the Nets, the Bucks, and the Sixers.
Yeah, for sure. I'd definitely say that that's a good trade for the Heat. You know, Oladipo is kind of that added piece that the Heat needed in a way. You know, as we know, Butler's not a big shooter. He's a big slasher kind of guy. And, I mean, Bam can kind of hit an outside shot, but again, same with him. He'd rather be inside. And Oladipo kind of adds that, you know, shot-creating kind of three-point shooting kind of star that they needed, because they had some players like that, but not necessarily stars. Like Tyler Hero, he's good, but for some reason, Heat fans think he's Michael Jordan. Like, they want to keep him around. They could have traded him for Harden. They could have traded him for somebody else. I forgot who. But, yeah, I mean, him, Duncan Robinson, they're good, but, like, you kind of wanted an upgrade from that. And they were able to keep those pieces as well from this Oladipo trade. Yeah. Like you said, they got him for nothing. Yeah. Like Olynyk was the big piece that they traded.
I'm like, oh wow.
Come on now.
it was just shocking how like these teams are basically fleecing other teams. You know, it's kind of remarkable. And then, you know, Noah and Dom, I'll go to you with these next two ones. Obviously, Dom, me and you talked about this before, you know, we started the show, but, you know, Kyle Lowry, he didn't get dealt, but Norman Powell did get dealt to the Jazz. You know, I think that was a big move for them and adds more depth to that team. Kind of hurts me in fantasy. Though. I don't think
he went to the Trailblazers.
Probably. Yeah, Portland, I believe.
Oh, he went to Portland. That's right. Really?
Yeah.
No one went to Utah.
A shooting guard, a lethal shooter, went from Toronto to Utah. I forget the name. But that was it. Norman Powell went to Portland.
All right. I'll look it up. I'll look it up and see who
Someone
was.
Did go to Utah, but just not him.
I'll figure it out. No, but Kyle Lowry, not going. A lot of rumor, a lot of buzz around him getting traded, didn't get traded. You know, what do you think was the reason why? Do you think it was because they couldn't get enough trading assets for him? Do you think he wanted to stay? Or
you know, I'm actually kind of shocked about it, but then I saw some like rumors afterwards, and it said like that the Raptors won like a ton for Lowry, and the Lakers weren't willing to part with Talen Horton Tucker is his name. So he was a possible trade candidate, but the Lakers wanted to hold on to him for some reason and not get Lowry, which I get it. Lowry's getting older, but with LeBron and AD down right now and you got Dennis Schroeder, you might as well get Lowry. He's still got it. So that was kind of shocking. I think it was just other teams saying, you know what, if Lowry's at this age right now, why take him? I think it was a weird approach to kind of go to. So I think the Lakers missed out totally on that. If it was for Talen Horton Tucker or maybe some other prospect kind of candidates. I think Lowry, the Raptors were just not getting enough attention for him. And other teams, for some reason, just didn't eye him. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's the Raptors' fault. I just think it's other teams not taking advantage sooner.
Right. And then obviously Noah, correcting myself from my statement I made earlier, you know, Norman Powell going to the Trailblazers. You know, he adds more depth to that team. You know, it's now Lillard, it's now McCollum, it's now him. You know, Gary Trent Jr., Carmelo Anthony, who's been, you know, playing pretty well these last few weeks. So, you know, do you think this can elevate them, you know, to really, get it going in the West?
Yeah, I mean, they're in sixth right now, and they're right with the Nuggets and right behind the Lakers, who are going to take a slide here. So I think it adds a lot to that team. And I think the trade that you were thinking of was Utah trade for Matt Thomas.
Yeah. That's who it was.
And then it was for a future second round pick. So I just looked that up according to Woj. So, I think the Trailblazers are one of those teams that they could be a tough 6-3, 5-4 matchup for a team. And again, the Lakers going down, the Trailblazers with McCollum getting healthy again and Lillard being there, they're going to need an extra guy like Powell to help them. And I think he can do that. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then obviously, you know, as we look to, you know, teams that didn't make some trades that were rumored to be trades, obviously, you know, Sean and Chris, you know, the Knicks, you know, obviously, you know, they've been getting it going, you know, they're now one game over 500. And there were rumors that you guys were at least saying in our group chat about, you know, Lonzo Ball possibly come to the team. It was been circulating around for at least a couple of weeks. And it really got going when the trade deadline was approaching. Chris, I'll start with you. Did you want Lonzo in an orange and blue uniform? Did you want him, you know, in the Garden? Were you willing to give up some assets, you know, to get him to New York?
I mean, I think like adding Lonzo Ball talent wise is probably better than and has a higher ceiling than any point guard on the roster right now of the Knicks. So like adding him definitely would have been a nice boost to the offense, but at the same time, like to me, like I didn't want to see the Knicks give up too much because he's an expiring contract. I'm pretty sure he's in the last year of his deal.
Yep.
And I like also I kind of like the chemistry that the Knicks have at the moment. That you know, like right now they're playing really well as a unit, and they seem like they have this like sort of like camaraderie in the locker room, and they're together. And like, I think that's kind of like what our president saw, Leon Rose. I think he kind of just was like, you know, like, I like what we have right now. A lot of guys are going to be expiring this summer. There's going to be a lot of potential free agents out there. Like, I think that's kind of the same approach we took with Drummond. Like, we're going to pitch Drummond, but he's going to be a free agent this year. So that's why we didn't make a move for him. You know, I can kind of understand why the Knicks decided to stay complacent. And like, I'm not upset with it. Lonzo would have been nice, but I'm not upset that the Knicks were complacent. I like what we have right now.
Sean, you know, going to you, I mean, did you, you know, to bounce off a record, you know, are you satisfied with what the Knicks have right now going, you know, and that, you know, no moves were made to kind of get you maybe a little bit higher in the East, considering that you guys are kind of right there and maybe one person could have really elevated it? Or are you just like, no, let's just stay where we're at and just keep going, and then in time, you know, we'll get better?
Yeah, the Knicks are in that weird pack of teams in the East right now where if they lose a game, they'll be in eighth, but if they win, they'll be in fourth. So, it's really weird. We're floating around like 500, which is cool. You know, it's nice to see New York Knicks basketball be competitive like this. It's been a long time. But you know what? I can't say I'm satisfied with the team right now. And I feel like this just comes from, you know, the New York just system being so expecting. And I kind of fall into that sometimes myself, being, you know, a Rangers and a Knicks fan. You know, you want to always see a little bit more. And, you know, I wanted to see a little more. I feel like if we brought at least one extra piece, we didn't necessarily have to trade a lot. I mean, we saw what it took to get Derrick Rose. Just one extra piece, it would have been pretty nice for the Knicks to also, you know, attract some big free agents in this next upcoming free agency pool or whatever. I feel like the time is not over yet because Andre Drummond is still on the table. We could still sign him to a big deal because, I mean, technically you could just sign him whenever right now because the Cavs bought him out. So I think we just need one more piece if we want to be, you know, if we're serious about winning this season, which, I mean, obviously we're not going to win like the finals right now. But if we want to win, like, I don't know, if we just want to make the playoffs, if we want to, you know, be a contender, not like, you know, not someone's like, oh, you know what, if they make it, they're gonna win. No, if we just want to float around and, you know, get our names there, I think we should have at least traded for one piece, not over trading like Chris said. But you know, I think Drummond would be great for the Knicks right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I know, you know, obviously, you know, when the rumors swirled about Drummond, everyone's like, oh, he's gonna go to Brooklyn and this and the other. And now you guys were just like, I swear to God, if this man goes to Brooklyn, it's not fair. We don't know where he's gonna go. He's gonna get a lot of offers from a lot of different teams on the table. He's gotta make a decision of where he's gonna spend the future, whether it be for a year or a couple years. That'll be soon to be confirmed down the road, and you know, we'll report on that when that does happen. But we gotta take a quick break. When we come back, you know, we're going to get into this day in history. And on this day in history, an NBA icon played his last and final game. And we'll talk about if he deserves to be a top as one of the greatest to ever play the game of basketball. That's coming up only on the Sports Fever on 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7TheBronx.com.
And we're back with this edition of the Sports Fever. Let's send it back to our hosts now.
.com live from the Rider University Studios. It's the Sports Fever. I'm your host, Andy Colasano. And alongside me today is Don DeRosa, Sean Johnson, and our guest for this episode, Chris Witowski. So in this segment, we're going to do, obviously, what we've been doing the last couple episodes on every second segment of the show, This Day in Sports History. And this one's an interesting one. On this day, March 28th in 1972, the great, late great Wilt Chamberlain played his last and final professional basketball game. As we all know, Wilt is, you know, he's regarded as one of the great basketball players to play the game. He, however, isn't considered the greatest, even though he is the only player to drop 100 points in a basketball game. You know, and it kind of shocks me because a lot of people have this debate now, you know, obviously with Jordan and LeBron. You know, you could probably throw Kobe in that mix, but you know, Wilt and like Bill Russell and those guys, they don't really get mentioned kind of in this conversation because of the era in which they played in and how the competition wasn't as competitive and how the game wasn't where it was in the 80s and obviously in the modern day, like right now. You know, so Chris, I'll start with you. You know, is it Do you think it's not fair to put Wilt in that conversation? Like, do you think he deserves to be at that table or at least be talked about, you know, right next to like Jordan and LeBron?
I mean, I think when you sit down and talk about the greatest of all time, Wilt Chamberlain is definitely somebody's name has to come into consideration. I think for sure he's like one of the greatest centers of all time, if not the greatest center. He's definitely in my top three greatest centers, right along with Bill Russell and Kareem. It's probably my top three in centers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I definitely think he deserves to be in the GOAT conversation because he's one of the best to ever play that position. And to add to that, he holds like an unbreakable record of 100 points in a game. I don't think anybody will ever break that record.
Mm-hmm.
And then along with several other records, you know, he had a lot of success in LA. You know, he was like the first great superstar really to come from LA outside of like Elgin Baylor and Jerry West. So, mm-hmm. you know, that'll always follow him. You know, the fact that he was in a really big name, that he played for a really big name city and won a lot of games, you know, that bodes well for his career. So yeah, I definitely think that he should be in the GOAT conversation.
Now, Sean, is he in your, I know, you know, Chris said that he's in his top three centers of all time. Would you put him in yours, or do you have a different list? And does he just fall short of yours if he's not?
I'd probably put him top three. Maybe at two. I'm not exactly sure. It gets a little shaky. But, I mean, that man was playing on easy mode. Like, if you think about it, like, he was, like, just so much taller than everybody at the time. That's, like, putting like an 8'5" dude in the NBA right now, like, it's just kind of insane. Like, it was just too easy for him. Like, this man would like literally like be like just literally just 2-3 feet, or obviously not 2-3 feet, but he was just so much taller than everyone else like on the court. And it was, I mean, obviously we never really got to see it live, or really I've never even really seen videos or anything.
Yeah, I really like, haven't, you know, taken the time to do that either.
Yeah, like, you know, you just kind of hear, but like, I mean, I believe it because, like, you know, the NBA's just kind of progressively been getting taller. Like if you think of like all the big time centers back then, they'd probably, if they were in the league, they'd be power forwards today. Like,
mm-hmm.
like Bill Russell, he was only like 6'8", 6'9". So like having somebody that tall around that time was just like, I mean, it was unfair pretty much.
Yeah, I agree, and I think you're right. I think Bill Russell was like, I don't think he was like 7 foot. I think he was like 6'10" or something.
Like, he's like Sean said, he was like 6'9".
Yeah, 6'9", 6'8".
He was, wow. Huh? Yeah.
He's known.
Wait. You're talking about Bill. You're saying Bill Russell, right? Not Will.
Yeah. Bill Russell.
Okay. I was about to say because Will listed at 7'1".
Yeah. Which is like tall for today's NBA. So like,
yeah.
The fact that he was 7'1" back in the day, that's just
yeah. It was like Shaq. He was Shaq before Shaq, basically. Just not as like this dominant force. I'm just gonna bully you in the paint, just destroy you. But he did it in other facets. You know, he wasn't like, he was intimidating in different ways than what Shaq later became to be when he entered the league. But you know, I think you're right. I think, look, he is a top three center of all time. You know, I feel like it's a rotation between, I feel like he's got to be in it. Obviously I would put Kareem just because he holds the scoring title, scoring title for most points. And also with all the rings that he has. And then the third one you can kind of switch in and out between like Hakeem, Shaq. You can maybe put Yao Ming in it if you can make a strong argument for him. Bill Russell, obviously. But I think those two are kind of locks. I think Kareem and Wilt for sure. And then the third, you could intertwine. But Dom, I know, you know, you've said time and time again to me and to everybody, you know, you haven't been really watching the game of basketball. We've had the debate before about how the league has changed and it hasn't really changed for the better. And Chris, maybe I'll get your take on this as well. And I'll explain to you more of why. You know, he thinks that, but you know, Wilt Chamberlain,
yeah,
top three center.
Oh yeah, I actually have my list.
Okay,
on that, I think he's top three. I'm not gonna rank it, but who goes above him is, I think, Shaq, and then either Olajuwon or what's the other name I'm thinking of? Not Bill Russell. Actually, wait, let me look it up. Oh, Kareem. All right, so yeah. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So yeah, no, I think he's definitely top three in there rather than top five. So yeah, Will Chamberlain, not only did he have a 100-point game, he also had a 50-rebound game and performance. So That's also never going to be broken either. Man was a phenom, really known with Philadelphia for his time and Golden State. But he was good with the Lakers towards the end, but that's when he was regressing. The guy was just an absolute unit. Like Sean said, man, he put up video game numbers on rookie mode.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it for him, for sure. And then real quick, I'll get, you know, Chris, and I think Sean, I don't think you were on the episode when we talked about this. You might have been doing something, but a couple weeks ago, you know, on this day in history, it was Steph Curry's 33rd birthday. And, you know, we kind of talked about how, you know, he evolutionized the game with the 3-point shot. And ever since then, the league's kind of evolved into this really heavy 3-point shooting league. And we kind of talked about how it's kind of hurt the league, even though it wasn't really Curry's fault. We feel like the league has kind of taken a step back and more people are just launching threes and not really doing more fundamental things in the league because of, you know, you guys watch a lot of NBA games as well, and you see people just chucking it from 30 feet deep and just going back and forth. There's real no like plays being made or people really going in the post and, you know, taking a lot of inside shots or even mid-rangers for that fact of the matter. So Chris, I'll start with you on this and then Sean, I'll go to you. Do you think that the game has regressed and has it you know, change for the worse because of the 3-point shot, or do you think it's good and it's gotten better?
I think the game in certain aspects has maybe taken a bit of a step back, but not completely. And here just real quick, here's because I don't want to get too much into it because this is, you know, definitely a very debatable topic, but. Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing I'd say that where the league is taking a step back is the fact that a guy can pump fake, jump forward into a defender trying to contest, and it's a foul. That is the worst foul, form of foul to ever enter into the game of basketball, and it single-handedly is. I don't want to say completely ruining the game, but it's bad for basketball. That sort of foul is just really bad for basketball. The fact that a guy can lunge into a defender and draw a foul that way is just I don't agree with that kind of play style at all. But that's today's NBA. Now, however, a lot of people, the other side of it is, other than that, I wouldn't really say the game has taken that much of a step back. You know, a lot of people say that like the mid-ranger and things like that are a lost arc. But I think that people forget about the guys who patent their game on it. Like if you look at somebody like Kawhi Leonard really only takes like two or three threes a game. So like he makes a lot of his money on the mid range and driving. He shoots turnaround mid range from the elbow. Like that's his that's a patent move for Kawhi. Same thing with DeMar DeRozan. He's made his whole career off the mid range shot. Lou Williams, a guy who takes endless mid range fading out off the corner. So like to me, the mid-range shot is definitely not completely lost. There's a lot of guys that I think still take it, and I think people kind of miss that a little bit, you know. And then like your point about back to the basket, you can only play back to the basket if you have a center who's capable of playing back to the basket. And I think that's kind of that part of the game might be coming a little bit lost because not every team has like a dominant center. Centers are kind of becoming lost. In today's NBA, there's only a select few teams that can really rely on back-to-the-basket offense. And as we've seen, back-to-the-basket offense doesn't necessarily translate into wins because guys are shooting more threes. You know, if you look at like Illinois, they recently got upset trying to go back to the basket with their big center, Cockburn. So like for me, like that sort of, it's hard to win with that sort of play. So that's why I think you see less teams go into that style of play. So like to wrap this all up, like I think the NBA is taking a little bit of a step back with calling the fouls on the lunge-ins, but not completely.
John, do you have anything to add to that about kind of you know, the 3-point shot and, you know, it's kind of its role in the game of basketball today?
I'm definitely just going to build off of a lot of what Chris said. But just to quickly get into what you were saying about like the pump fake and then draw the defender in, I hate that. I mean,
the type of players
that rely on that, it's really annoying.
And it
prolongs the game too. Trae Young, James Harden
yep.
did it a lot. I don't know if he still does it a lot.
It's more when he drives it and doesn't. I won't say that. I'm a fan. He's on my team. He still does it.
And I mean, Emmanuel quickly does it too. It's like he tries so hard to do it. Like it's to the point where like if he's got a defender on him and he's shooting, he's not even looking for the shot. He's just looking for the foul and that's it. Like he's not even trying to make the shot. Like it's just very frustrating to watch players like that. And I hope quickly can kind of, you know, get out of that kind of play style. But, you know, to get into the three-point shooting now, if anything, I actually kind of think that makes the game a little bit better. And for this reason is because, you know, back in the day when there wasn't really a lot of three-point shooting, you know, there wasn't even the three-point line. You know, you had, like, superstars, like guys like Michael Jordan. I mean, the line was there for him. But, like, you weren't having guys like – kids growing up like, oh, like I can dunk right now on Michael Jordan. Yeah, like this is great. Like you have to wait till you get to like high school till you can start dunking. Then you're like, oh yeah, like this is, you know, oh, I'm Michael Jordan. No, but like you could be in second grade and make a three and you could be like, oh, I'm just like Steph Curry. I'm just like Damian Lillard. The reason why I think that's so important is because like players can kind of like, you know, watchers can kind of really think that, you know, they're doing something that's such a big part of the game today. Whereas like if they were trying to model their game after something like in the 80s, like they can't be like, you know, like I said, Michael Jordan dunking from the free throw line in like fifth grade.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, yeah, I agree with that. I think that the one thing, and I think, you know, it kind of encompasses what you said, is that it helps the game garner a younger audience. So I agree with that wholeheartedly that, you know, kids who are 8, 9, 10, 11 could start hitting threes and feel like they are Steph Curry, feel like they can be a CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard. It really just,
and
you'll build off that and become better basketball players because they know they have that confidence.
And I kind of got one more point about this. It's kind of building off what Chris was saying. A lot of the like superstars in the league right now aren't even like mainly three-point shooters. There's really only two that comes to mind, and Damian Lillard and Steph Curry. And they're also, those two guys are just much more than three-point shooters though, but like that's their thing. But like, I mean, every superstar you can think of right now, like they're okay at shooting threes, but it's like not their main thing. Like Chris was saying, like, you know, Kawhi's got that mid-range jumper. There's a lot of centers that, like, you know, they can shoot the three, but they're not sitting there chucking every time. Mainly there's guys that are used for that role, for like the kind of just three-point shooter defender, that's it. Like, you know, guys like Danny Green, mm-hmm. guys like, I don't know,
Steph Curry,
Otto Porter, Kevin Herter, like, you know, there's an assigned role for that, but those guys aren't superstars.
3 and D.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that, you know, the 3 and D is, you know, a new kind of style and new role in the game of basketball. But, you know, I think you guys hit it right on the head that, like, look, there are stuff within the realm of the evolving of the three and just the overall abundance of shot making that does need to be changed. But I think overall, I think you guys kind of hit it right on the head and kind of counter what we all kind of said in terms of the three ruining the game, and that it really hasn't really ruined the game because of the points you just said. So I think you guys are right. I feel like, you know, we got to revisit this topic at a later date and really take a full head dive into it and really have a serious debate about this, kind of bring back debate month like we did back in the summer of 2020. But we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the game of the week or the games of the week, as Thursday, April 1st, it will be a very exciting day. We'll explain that more in detail after these underwriting announcements, only on the Sports Fever on 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7TheBronx.com.
And we're back with this edition of the Sports Fever. Let's send it back to our hosts now.
107.7 The Bronx, 107.7TheBronx.com, live from the Rider University Studios. It's the Sports Fever. I'm your host, Anthony Colasano. And alongside me today is Dom DeRosa, Sean Johnson, Noel Gugliotta, or otherwise known as
Googs. Oh, yes. NSYNC. Good job.
Yeah, yes, sir. And our lovely guest for this episode, Chris Witowski. So in this segment, obviously it's the third segment. It's the game of the week. And it's opening day this week, Thursday, April 1st. You know, baseball is going to kick off, going to have a full season. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. And we're looking forward to it. And I know Noah's especially looking forward to it because he just announced prior to coming on the air that he's actually going to be going to opening day.
I made my big announcement to the group. And yeah, I'm excited. My friend has tickets. So hopefully we do have to get a rapid test before we go. So I think we'll get it that morning and hopefully it all works out and COVID doesn't get in the way. But I'm excited. It should be fun. We should have Garrett Cole on the mound.
Yes, that's confirmed. He pitched his last spring training game on Friday, so he won't be pitching until Thursday afternoon.
Yep. And Anthony, you announced during the break about Luke Voit.
Yes.
So that is a little bit rough to hear as somebody who's going to be going to the game that'll be out, 3 weeks, 4 weeks? So
probably at least four to 6 weeks. They said 3 weeks. It's definitely going to be more. For those of you that don't know, Luke Voit was announced to have a partially torn meniscus in his knee. It's going to undergo, I believe it's probably going to be arthroscopic surgery to get it repaired. So that's not good for Yankee fans, especially going to opening day. Going into the season already with a big bat down, it's just reliving it all over again. Just more injuries. But Chris, I'll start with you since you're the guest. You know, obviously you're a big Yankee fan like all of us are. What are you looking forward to seeing from this Yankee team? This season, obviously the division is an interesting one. Obviously the Yankees are favorite, but you got the Blue Jays who they're facing this week. They're kind of on the up and up. The Red Sox are kind of in this lull period, and so are the Rays, and the Orioles are kind of just going to be a forgotten team. They're going to be the laughingstock of the division and probably the league. So what are you looking forward to them to do against the Blue Jays and then them to go forward to have a successful 2021 season?
Well, I think in order for the Yankees to have a pretty successful season, it's going to be shown in the pitching. I think you got to see what Kluber has left now that they brought him in. I know a lot of Yankee fans, including myself, are kind of excited to see what that signing can be and to see what he could do for the organization. Another thing that I think is going to be pretty key for the Yankees this season is to see how motivated Gary Sanchez is, because Gary Sanchez is definitely on the hot seat as a Yankee. They have Higgy. He seems to be another reliable option who could potentially take Gary's spot. That's why Gary's on another 1 year deal. So for me, I think if a motivated Gary could be a good thing. This is kind of where you find out with him what he's gonna be for the organization. I think if he doesn't perform this year, it hurts the Yankees, and you probably see him walk next year. The Yankees will probably let him walk. So I think that's one key storyline to watch. And then another thing, I'd also like to see what Gardner brings back to the table this year. Coming back as that solid veteran presence for the Yankees, see what he does for them. They should be an interesting team to watch this year. And like you said, they're the favorite for the division. So I'm excited to see what happens here on opening day.
No, and I'll go to you, and then we'll go to, Dom and Sean to talk about their respective teams. But, you're going to the game, obviously he talked about kind of the Yankees and where they stand. What do you think about kind of the teams that are going to be, kind of like in their face and competing with them pretty heavily? Obviously the Blue Jays who we're facing this week, the White Sox, I would say maybe in the West, like the A's and maybe the Astros. But what are you seeing from other competitors in the league?
I would say that you named the teams I'm most worried about, really the White Sox and the Blue Jays, because the Blue Jays are in our division, and I think obviously the Rays kind of take a step back without Blake Snell and everything. But I'm pretty confident. I think this team, the COVID aspect is a little worrisome, but with the vaccines and with everything that's coming down the pike, I think that we'll be okay. Coming soon. I think Chris mentioned it during the break. I'm still worried about personally for the Yankees injuries, because I think all those teams you mentioned, I think they can compete with them. I think the toughest definitely will be the White Sox, and I think mainly because their lineup is really deep and their starting pitching is really tough as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Yankees can stay healthy, and we're already off to a bad start with Luke Voit, but the lineup still can pick up and it could be like no one's gone, you know, because people like I'm excited to see what Clint Frazier can do this season.
Mm-hmm.
I think what Chris said about Gary Sanchez, his motivation, I think that's really important because, you know, I want to see him care. Like, it just feels like he's kind of up there and lost, and it just doesn't feel like he cares at times. So I want to see that. But I think the rest will follow through. I think Stanton and Judge, I'm excited to see. You know, we've talked about this, the less weightlifting and stuff like that. Hopefully that will manifest into something that can bring us good results. So I'm excited. I'm excited for Thursday. I'm excited for the season. I'm ready for baseball to be back.
Yeah, as we all are. You know, and Sean, I'll go to you next. You're near in our division as well as the Red Sox fan. Last season wasn't a great season. You know, they really struggled. JD Martinez probably had one of the worst seasons ever. And it showed due to what the Astros did with the video stuff and him not being able to use that to his advantage and using it correctly, which JD Martinez has done in the past before all this went down. But what are you looking from him and also from, you know, a returning Chris Sale?
Yeah, you know what? Besides the Red Sox, I'm definitely looking forward to the Rangers Flyers this opening day. Oh, wait, my bad. That's hockey. My bad. I mean, other scores lately have been looking like baseball scores, so that's the only reason I bring it up. But that's a little hockey joke. For those who don't know, the Rangers beat up on the Flyers in the last game. They have really looked like baseball scores. But, you know, to get back on track.
Wait, Sean, you know who's the owner of the Flyers, right? Mika Zibanejad.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, we'll address that another time. But yeah. So, you know, the Red Sox definitely need to have a bounce back season. I think last year, as you mentioned, was so rough to watch. I mean, from seeing the Red Sox be one of the top teams in the league to not even being a top team in our own division. Anthony, you saw it. I'd be watching Red Sox games in the dorm and everything. It was just not a good time. I'd turn it off in like the second inning. But yeah, our pitching was bad. Everything about our team was bad, pretty much. Our stars were gone. We didn't have Chris Sale. You know, JD Martinez was pretty much absent. But heading into this opening day, you know, I'm a little excited. I mean, we looked really good in spring training. We had some like kind of breakout guys in spring training and Bobby Dalbec, who had a good last season. He didn't play the whole season, but he got called up and he was hitting bombs in the regular season last season. But I mean, like I said, in spring training, I think he led the league in home runs. And then we got some guys that are now coming to the team, like Kike Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, this infield, this is the most excited I've been for this infield since like Pedroia and Ortiz. I mean, we got Devers, who, you know, we know about him. We know of his potential and how good he is now. We got Bogarts, who, again, with him, you know, he's like our guy right now, Bogarts.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kike Hernandez and Dalbec, like I just mentioned, two pretty good guys. Obviously, Kike Hernandez being like the kind of, I'm not sure about him one. But, again, I'm excited for Bobby Dalbec. So, again, yeah, that's our infield's looking really good to start off this season. And then going to the outfield, it's definitely changed a whole lot, you know, since our World Series win. No Mookie, no JBJ, no Benintendi. So, I mean, every single one of the players from, like, you know, the Wind Dancer Pete, they're all gone. And we got Frankie Cordero now, Alex Verdugo.
We have this on YouTube, right? This is going on YouTube, correct?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Damn it! Oh, damn! I
want to
see that again.
I should have recorded. I should have been recording.
Yeah, that's okay.
You guys know what I'm saying.
I think we just got Sean off track. He started hitting that real quick.
Yeah. It's like a perfect moment.
I didn't try to look away, but I could.
Yeah, you looked up.
Yeah,
that's great.
Oh my god, no, but I mean, Sean, I agree with you. I think you're right about Kike Hernandez because I mean, this guy has been a utility guy all throughout his career with the Dodgers, so he really hasn't had a big role kind of until now. You know, I would assume he's probably going to be the starting second baseman for the team. And there's going to be a lot of weight on his shoulders, you know, coming from that organization, winning a championship. You know, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him to kind of show these guys, you know what it takes to win. I know that, you know, Bogaerts and Devers were in that, and Martinez were in that group, and I think, and Sale was too. I think he was, because he struck out the last guy in that World Series. But I think
Who struck out?
Who did he strike
out? Shut up.
Who did he strike
Manny
out?
Manny Machado.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was a devastating.
That was a good pitch.
Oh.
Shut up.
Hey, I was rooting for Boston too, Sean. You know?
That
I was.
That was not good. But yeah, I think it's up to those four guys to really kind of cultivate this team, really get them back to where you guys once were. You know, and kind of make, you know, our rivalry, Yankees Red Sox rivalry, great again, like it was, you know, back in, you know, 17 and 18, and 19. But you know, real quick, Don, I'll go to you, cause we only have a couple minutes. Unfortunately, your Padres are kind of the team to beat, the team to watch this season with Fernando Tatis and, you know, all the young studs you guys got going on. And you're one of the favorites to win the World Series.
That's so weird. I'm not used to that.
On you.
Yeah, I'm really excited. It has been announced that Yu Darvish will be the opening day starter for the San Diego Padres against the Arizona Diamondbacks, followed by Blake Snell in game two. So weird to say that. They fleece absolutely both teams. So Victor Caratini will be catching the first game, something new. But it's pretty cool. I'm excited for that. You got him, Luis Campusano, and of course Austin Nola once he's fine with that fractured finger. So they have a lot of depth. That's the one thing I like about the Padres to where the Dodgers lost. I'm telling you, I think Kike is going to be really cool to watch in Boston. He's already making highlights in spring training. He's a hard worker. And the Dodgers losing him and Jock Peterson is big time. As the Padres re-signed Jurickson Profar, they got Jorge Mateo, they got Campusano. Mm-hmm. They got a lot of depth still. I know they lost Mitch Moreland and Rosenthal, but they replaced that eventually with Keone Kella and Mark Melanson. This team is just scary. I think people forget about Drew Pomeranz too as a setup closer reliever.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just really excited, Ant. It's just weird to see one of my teams, let alone my baseball team, finally be in contention mode. I mean, I went to games and Tyson Ross was the starting pitcher in the really gross, bland gray and blue uniforms. So I'm really excited, Anthony, and I can't wait so much. You know I'm going to be watching every single game if it lasts 162.
Yep. It's good. It's good. It's always fun when your team's contending, that's for sure. We all enjoy that feeling. We hope that feeling always lasts forever, but we all know that, you know, you always, you know, in sport, there's always a small window. And you got to capitalize it when you can. So you guys have that window, and it's up to you, to the Padres, to capitalize on it. But, you know, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, it'll be the fourth and final segment of the show. We got to have our lock of the day. And we're going to talk about NFL free agency. You know, Chris, you know, he's one of the lock masters. He always, you know, brings out the picks and he gives out winners. So he's going to give us a couple. And we're going to talk NFL free agency to wrap up the show. You're listening to The Sports Fever only on 107.7 The Bronc and 107.7TheBronc.com.
And we're back with this edition of The Sports Fever. Let's send it back to our hosts now.
.com, live from the Rodney University Studios. It's the Sports Fever. I'm your host, Anthony Colasano. And alongside me today is Dom DeRosa, Sean Johnson, and our special guest for this week, Chris Witowski. So in the final segment of the show, obviously, we have our lock of the day. And also, we're going to get into quickly about some NFL free agency that's been going on in the last couple of weeks. It's starting to ramp up, and guys are starting to, you know, sign with their respective teams. And, you know, Chris, you know, he is a... he's not a, you know, he doesn't do sports gambling for a living, but he is, you know, very good in that field. He always gives out locks and always gets big winners and, you know, wants people around him, you know, to take it seriously and to, you know, pick games smartly and, you know, not really just do it for fun. You can do it for fun, but at the end of the day, you want to be, you know, smart about it and make logical decisions. And, you know, Chris does that very well on a weekly basis. So, Chris, it's the, you know, it's the final segment, lock of the day. What are your locks for this Sunday?
Well, this Sunday, I happen to like the Suns a lot over who they're playing. I like them a lot over the Hornets. The Hornets are pretty weak right now. They lost also LaMelo Ball recently, kind of the driving force for that team. You know, and the Suns look really strong. You know, they look like a Western Conference playoff team. Chris Paul's got them running right. So, yep, I like Suns money line for sure.
Okay. Is that the only lock you got? Or you got one more? If that's the only one, that's fine. I was just wondering if you had another one.
For tomorrow, that's pretty much all I have. You know, if you're feeling a little risky, you know, I would recommend taking you know, maybe the Lakers over the Magic. The Lakers are weak right now, and so are the Magic. The Magic basically just traded their entire team away, all their stars, Evan Fournier, Aaron Gordon, and Vucevic. You know, the Lakers are down, but I don't think they're completely out. I think Schroeder, Harrell, and Kuzma are enough to get them over the Magic. So, you know, if the Lakers are an underdog, I definitely recommend taking the spread if it's a plus, and if not, take the money line.
All right, word. We will do that. So that's it for the lock of the day. Phoenix, take them. Lakers, take them. And obviously, you know, to wrap it up entirely for the show, NFL free agency, that's mainly the reason why Chris, you know, wanted to be on the show to kind of talk about it. So we'll start with kind of, you know, the big guy that signed for your G-men, Kenny Golladay. You know, signed a $72 million deal, $40 million guaranteed. So, you know, I want to get your thoughts on the move and, you know, how this can really shape, you know, the Giants offense going into the 2021 season.
You know, getting a big playmaker like Golladay is definitely big for the Giants. You know, it gives Daniel Jones an outside threat. You know, but the number one thing for me is can Golladay stay healthy? He's had some health issues in the past. When he is on the field, though, he's right up there with the upper echelon of receivers in the league for sure. He's one of the best 50-50 football players when it comes to the passing game. So that's one thing I'm going to be looking for. You know, the Giants don't have a lot of guys who can make plays on the outside, so that's big for him. And this is also a test year for Daniel Jones. If Golladay does stay healthy and, you know, Saquon stays healthy and the offense is healthy, there's no excuse for Daniel Jones not to go out there and lead this football team to playoff football come January, so mm-hmm. and into the later months of the season. So for me, like, this is make or break for Daniel Jones. If he doesn't get the team to the playoffs or at least be competitive to make the playoffs, I see him getting the boot next year by upper management for sure.
I couldn't agree with you more. And then to kind of go off of you know, that big free agency signing, what other kind of notable signings do you like that have happened within football and, you know, some that haven't? So real quick, maybe give me two signings that you absolutely loved that happened, and two that you were kind of, I don't know if that's really going to work out.
Well, one signing that I particularly loved a lot was an interdivision signing by Sean's Cowboys, as a matter of fact. I really liked the signing of Keanu Neal for the Cowboys. They need secondary help, and I think that's a guy who's going to give it to them. They got him on a one-year kind of like prove-it deal to see what he's got left in the tank, which I love even more. You know, Jets fans were extremely heated over that. It was between them and the Cowboys, and obviously the Cowboys are 10 times more competitive than the Jets are at the moment. So he chooses the Cowboys on a small deal. Great signing. Low budget, high value player. Another signing that I particularly liked a lot was I liked Corey Davis to the Jets a lot. I thought that was a big add for the Jets. If they're gonna draft a quarterback, I thought that was one thing that they did particularly right. You know, they were able, you know, listen, Corey Davis could be a number one target. He as a number three receiver, he was putting up number two numbers last year for the Titans. So I think if they're going to keep Sam Darnold or they're going to move on, whatever quarterback they go on with, that's a great target to have. And then some signings where I'm kind of like, I don't know if that's going to work, would be Kenyon Drake to the Raiders. To me is really questionable. They traded their whole offensive line, you know, and then you're going to go out and sign another running back when you already got Josh Jacobs. To me, that, like, everything the Raiders are doing to me makes no sense. I think they're going to look out for them in the lottery next year. Probably they're more than likely to be one of the worst teams in the NFL. They traded their whole O-line. You know, now Derek Carr's got nothing to pass behind. Josh Jacobs has got nothing to run behind. So for me, the Raiders, I'm just really raising my eyebrow with the Raiders and that signing in particular when you've already got a true number one.
Chris, and then, I just want to let you know, I'm totally agreeing with you on that. I didn't understand the move right away. Jacobs losing value both on the field and in fantasy points because I had him for fantasy, even though I lost. I had one of the best records because of him. I don't get the move for $11.5 million or so, too. That's like starting running back money. It doesn't make sense for a guy who's always injury prone as well. And yeah, trading the whole O-line, it's expensive. But yeah, I don't trust what Gruden's doing. And, you know, they extended Mariota just now. I think he's going to be the guy soon, too. And I know they have Carr with that big contract. But I don't know. This team's just confusing. I really miss Jack Del Rio. That's what I'm going to say, bud.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot going on in Oakland. And, you know, like Dom said, you know, you really don't know what to think with John Gruden. But, you know, he's going to be the driving force there, him and Mike Mayock, for at least the next 3 or 4 years. You know, the guy's inked to a 10-year deal. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with the Raiders and how they sort of construct this team come into training camp for August and preseason. So that'll be an interesting thing to look out for. And then another signing that, you know, I don't particularly get is, you know, the Texans brought Mark Ingram into an extremely crowded running back room. I don't get what they're doing at all. They haven't traded Deshaun Watson yet, which I think is a mistake. You know, the guy clearly doesn't want to be there. And then you bring, you know, Mark Ingram, who's a guy who's probably looking to prove himself, but like really has to prove himself in that running back room with David Johnson already there. And they got a couple other guys like Houston's interesting to me because they had the biggest free agency turnover. They signed like 50 or 60 players or something like that, which is like the biggest overall turnaround in free agency in a long time. So it's going to be interesting to see what Houston's doing and what their sort of plan is. But I don't really get Mark Ingram going there.
Interesting. No, yeah, I agree. I agree with those wholeheartedly. I think, you know, the Raiders one especially. You know, I don't know why you would bring in Kenyon Drake to the team. I mean, okay, is he going to be the second option? Okay, but like you guys said, the O-line is kind of destroyed, so how is that going to help him? Or Josh Jacobs, for that matter, to kind of do what they got to do on the running ground, you know? And then obviously, you know, the Texans doing what they did. I mean, they're just a stupid franchise. Let's just be real with that. You know, they let go of Hopkins for absolutely nothing to the Cardinals. They made J.J. Watt unhappy, so he was like, all right, peace out, I'm out of here. And now they got the Deshaun Watson, who, one, they're trying to trade for, and now they can't trade for because of all the allegations on against him. So they're just a mess, and it's even more of a mess with the signing that you just stated with Mark Ingram. But obviously, you know, we're kind of way over schedule, but that's okay. We had a fabulous guest joining us, so I feel like, you know, we'll make the exception of going over on time just for you, Chris. But yeah, it was great having you on. Always enjoy having you on. And yeah, you got to come back on again in a couple weeks, and you know, we'll probably maybe do another update on, you know, where everything's going on in football, and you know, and if the Knicks make the playoffs, you know, I think we got to do like a Knicks kind of round table with you guys. I feel like it would be probably you, Sean, Coop, Malcolm. Malcolm hasn't been on the show. I got to get him on. So yeah, so that should be fun.
Yeah,
I think we'll definitely try to do that. But thanks again for coming on. But that's going to do it for this edition of the Sports Fever. Be sure to check us out on Instagram, the_Sports_Fever, Twitter, the_Sports_Fever1. And you can give us an email at thesportsfever@gmail.com. That's going to do it for this edition of the episode. And we hope you have a great rest of your Sunday.
Thank you for listening to this edition of The Sports Fever. Be sure to subscribe to our channel and be on the lookout for new episodes Sundays from 12 to 1 on 107.7 The Bronx and also on every podcasting platform you can think of.